What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Welcome to Creature Feature, production of iHeartRadio. I'm your host of Mini Parasites, Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology, and today on the show, big mouths! Animals with absolutely animalistic appetites! From the stretchiest mouthed reptiles to sea creatures that are mostly mouths, we're talking about the most ghoulish gluttons on the globe. Discover this and more as we answer the age-old question, what the heck is wrong with herons? Joining me today is food writer, host of the podcast Smart Mouth, and expert on all things edible, Catherine Spires. Welcome!
Thank you so much for having me. I love doing this show.
I am excited to talk to you about this. I'm always impressed with animals that just go for it when they're eating. Like, you would think, hey, don't you want a smaller nibble maybe? And they're like, nope, I want the whole meal in my mouth immediately.
Yeah, because you don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly.
So you got to get it in while you can.
Right, exactly. You don't know if someone's going to catch you trying to get this thing. Someone's going to steal your food from right in front of you. So you've got to get the whole thing down your gullet within seconds, which is my sort of, that's how my brain interprets when I'm eating pizza, like what I have to do, which burns the roof of my mouth. And then 2 seconds later, I forget that pain and then continue.
I know, that's a hard one when something's so delicious or you just feel so panicky about it. You know, my dad was Irish Catholic and grew up in an Irish Catholic neighborhood, and everyone had a million kids. And that is the way humans eat also when there's a lot of people at the table. A lot of people that you don't care about manners in front of. And they still kind of do it to this day. It's still kind of like a slightly panicky situation when there's food around.
Hyenas at a carcass.
Exactly.
Yes. Yes. No, I mean, I think anyone who's had sort of a buffet style thing, and then you're competing with all your siblings and your cousins and your aunts and your uncles, you know, things can get messy.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if there's something highly prized, like clams. They're from Seattle. And, you know, everyone's memories of like being allotted 3 clams at dinner. Are there any animals that think about food like that? Like, are there any mom animals that allocate food that thoughtfully? I mean, it's kind of mean to only let people have 3 clams, but...
I mean, that's an interesting question. There are, I mean, certainly birds will feed their offspring, and if they have multiple offspring, they try to feed their, you know, many offspring. Some bird species will favor one offspring over the other and feed them more. There are certainly animals who will starve themselves in order to feed their offspring. So there are so many different ways in which animals will partition out food. In fact, some animals, like Fish or frogs will even eat some of their offspring just to make sure there's enough food to go around.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, there are lots of ways of handling this.
Indeed. And so our first animal we're talking about, it's one of my personal favorite snakes. It's an egg-eating snake. So all egg-eating snakes are quite impressive in terms of their ability to swallow whole eggs larger than their heads. But a genus of cute little snakes called Dasypeltis are the snakes with the highest prey size to their own size ratio in the snake world, meaning that relative to their body size, they can swallow the largest prey, but that prey is exclusively eggs.
So they have like a mono diet?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, they eat only eggs, typically bird eggs. And they cannot really eat anything else. They're highly, highly specialized.
And how often do they starve? Or is this something that's easy for them to get to?
Because they live in areas and are specialized to find bird nests, I think that they are fairly capable of feeding themselves. Like it's one of the things, like when you're really niche, you have to be really good and specialized at getting that food. But they happen to be really good at getting these eggs and specializing in it, to the point where they actually have basically no teeth. They really can't eat anything other than eggs. They're completely harmless to humans. They have no teeth. They have no venom. They're quite cute, I think. Some people might disagree. But they will, they're really harmless, and they try to pretend like they're tough. So they'll hiss by rubbing their scales together, producing this striation that makes a hissing sound. And then they'll lunge with a fake bite, but they don't actually bite. They just have their mouth kind of like open and then bonk against you harmlessly because they really have no bite to their bark. Like there's nothing they can do. They're just trying to intimidate you and pretend like they're a much tougher snake than they actually are.
Okay, that is pretty endearing. Do people keep these as pets?
They do indeed, yes. It's a fairly popular snake to keep as a pet. I think in addition to them being, you know, not dangerous to handle, it's also if you feel bad about feeding snakes live food, this one is easy to feed because you feed it eggs. Typically not chicken eggs. They might be a little too big, especially for the smaller species. But, you know, smaller eggs like quail eggs. Although, as we'll talk about, these snakes in the wild can eat eggs much larger than quail eggs. So,
oh, gosh. Okay, so I see what you're saying about it being cute when you look at the picture of just the snake. I think a lot of it has to do with it's not huge and its eyes are disproportionately large.
Yeah.
So it has that like Disney effect. But mm-hmm. Right below that, you have a picture of it eating an egg, and I don't care for that image.
Yeah, it's a little gut churning. The one that is pictured is actually the Ganz's egg eater. It has a head that's about the diameter of an adult human's finger, like depending on how beefy your hand is, either like your thumb or your pointer finger. And despite being so slender, it can swallow whole bird eggs. And they are able to grotesquely distend their mouths and their bodies in order to swallow eggs many, many times the size of their own heads. It's like, yeah, it's like if, I guess what would be like if we tried to swallow an entire watermelon, I think that would be sort of the relative size here.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Nature, man.
Yeah.
I have a question that this is a story that my sister told me 15 years ago, I think. She in college lived in a house with a bunch of other hippies, and one of them moved out but left his pet snake. And it wasn't a little guy like this. It was a big one. I don't know anything about snakes, but she would have to go to PetSmart or whatever and get mice to feed to it. And she wanted to like get into the whole snake world. She had this snake now, so she went to some herpetological society meetings. Mm-hmm. Is that the correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Okay. So it was sort of just an enthusiast group, and she was told the story that it was about, like, when they were talking about the best way to care for your pet snake and interact with your pet snake, and this couple had gotten a pet snake, medium to big. I mean, I don't know how big they get in nature, but, like, big for a pet, and they decided that they weren't going to keep it in a tank because that was cruel. That they were going to treat it basically like a puppy, including letting it sleep with them in their bed. And the snake stopped eating but kept growing. So they took it to the vet, and the vet was like, "Do you keep this snake in a tank?" And they were like, "No, we let it sleep with us. We let it go wherever it wants." And it was like, okay, so what snakes do is they, when they're preparing to eat something really large, is they, like, stop eating, so they have the appetite, but they grow to, like, accommodate the size of their prey, and the snake is preparing to eat you. So that's the story.
I don't believe that is true. Snakes, do not believe, have that much foresight. I've heard stories kind of like this before, where it's like a snake is sort of trying to measure you, like a pet snake trying to measure you to see if you're, it's big enough to eat you, or it'll stop eating to, like, kind of save room for you. Snakes really aren't planners like that. Burmese pythons, certainly they can kill people because they are, you know, constrictors. They can constrict around you. Boa constrictors can constrict and hurt you. I do not know of any cases of a pet snake eating an adult. I believe there might be cases of a pet snake killing an adult.
Okay.
And in terms of, like, feeding, they will usually feed very intermittently. So they can have a large meal and then basically not eat for many months. But I don't believe that is because it is saving room for a large meal. It's just, it doesn't really need to eat. Once it's had a large meal, it can metabolize that for quite a bit of time. And then it will, after a while, try to eat something else once it needs to.
Okay.
But
that
yeah.
makes me feel a little better. A little better about snakes.
Yes. But, you know, in terms of, like, snakes, so, like, what's interesting is, even though these guys are pretty small and cute looking, and other than when they're, like, distended around an egg, compared to, like, the Burmese python or other snakes, they have the stretchiest, most expandable jaws relative to their body size. So even though the Burmese python has been known to eat, like, goats, this snake, pound for pound, can eat larger prey than any other snake that has been studied. And so they really basically just stretch their mouth over the egg like a sock going over a foot. And this is why being toothless helps them. Like, they don't want that getting caught on the egg. They also have, like, these ridges on the inside of their mouth that helps grip onto the egg. And the reason they can stretch their mouth out like a sock is that their lower jaw comes in two sections, and it's connected by very stretchy connective tissue that can expand like elastic, like a rubber band. And so there's not, like, our jaw is in one piece. And so if we tried to stretch our mouth out, there's a limit. Our jaw is also fused to our upper jaw, and that's another problem. With snakes, they have unfused jaws, and then in addition to that, that separated mandible allows their jaw to stretch out even more. And so it will take in this egg, and, like, there's sort of with the movements of the jaws, the kind of ridge-like pattern on the inside of the cheeks and muscle movements, pulls the egg into the esophagus, and they can actually close their mouth and then have this whole, it'll just be this, like, thin snake and then, like, an egg shape, like, inside their throat. But you might have the question of, well, how do they digest this egg? It's still got its shell on it. They actually have these bone-like protrusions on the inside of their bodies that are actually part of their spine. And they use muscles to push the egg into these bony protrusions, and that breaks the egg. And then they squeeze the egg until, like, all of the edible egg material, the yolk, the white, everything, gets pushed out and into the rest of their digestive tract. And then once they've basically squeezed everything out of this egg, they regurgitate the shell, and they're remarkably efficient. Like, they leave very little of the egg that is not shell. So they basically, it's like they've eaten a pistachio nut and they're just spitting out the shell. It's just kind of an incredible feat for such a small animal. And it's all they can do, essentially. They exist to reproduce and process eggs. That's it.
Wait, so I've been thinking about this a lot because there's been a lot of talk of how there are mosquitoes in Los Angeles now, and apparently throughout history up till about 5 years ago there were not. So a lot of talk of, like, can you get rid of an entire species if it doesn't seem like it's contributing that much to the ecosystem? Turns out mosquitoes actually feed a lot of other animals. But what are these snakes? What do we need these snakes for?
You mean, what does humanity need these snakes for? What?
No, the animal planet. Population? The planet.
I mean, they are food for animals. So, like mosquitoes, they provide food for any kind of snake eating animals. They may eat some bird eggs, and some birds might actually eat them. They're small enough to be eaten by many birds of prey. We're actually going to talk about a bird who likes to eat lots of different snakes, maybe not the egg-eating snake in particular. Terms of, the local ecology, it's interesting, but, like, when you have something that eats, like, an egg, there are a lot of species of birds where they may have a lot of eggs, and then if they all hatch, you may actually have too many nestlings, and some of the nestlings may get sick or even get pushed out of the nest. So there may be some benefit even to birds for an egg-eating snake. Now, a lot of birds will also develop strategies to prevent snakes from eating their eggs, because if a snake goes and eats all their eggs, that's not good for the bird. And if you have a disproportionate, say you have, like, it's all about balance, really. It's like, wolf populations and deer populations, for instance. If you have too many wolves, that's bad for the deer. You have too few wolves, that can actually be bad for the deer as well, surprisingly, because if you have too dense a population of deer, they can get spread illness more easily. And so wolves can actually help prey populations thrive just as much as the prey populations can help the wolves thrive. So while I don't know, like, the exact specifics of this dynamic between egg-eating snakes and birds, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a similar thing where it's like, having the egg-eating snakes in balance with the birds can actually help control the bird population such that there's not too much competition for food or spread of disease. So these relationships are very, even when they're antagonistic, they can balance out in ways that actually creates a relatively stable ecosystem.
That's so interesting.
They're also cute. So, in my opinion...
I was going to say, are there any animals that you're afraid of?
I'm afraid of a lot of animals. I'm afraid of horses because okay. They can kill me if they're having a bad day. I love horses. I think they're sweet, gentle animals. I'm amazed that they don't destroy us at every turn. But if I'm face to face with a large horse, I'm intimidated. Maybe intimidated is the right word. I think I am afraid of, if I see a snake on the ground, my initial response is fear, because I don't know, it's like I have an instinctive response of fear. And then once I know whether it's, like, venomous or not, then my feelings change, essentially. But I'm not, like, looking at a photo of any animal. I don't feel disgust towards anything except for cockroaches and silverfish. It's a type of insect. And I think it's because I associate those Earwigs, too, to some degree. So because I think I associate those with them getting in my cereal boxes and being gross around food. So I have a negative associate. Like once I found half of a silverfish in a bowl of Cheerios that I was eating. So I was done with them after that.
Yeah.
So it's more of a disgust response, I think, to certain pests that actively get into my food. But it's also like I can see, like I have had mice as pets and I mm-hmm. like mice. But if I see a mice scurry across the room, or like when I was camping, have a mouse run across my foot, I have a reaction of dismay because it's right. not a context in which I want to see the mouse.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So when we get back, we are going to talk about a fish that you probably don't want to see in most contexts, except for maybe a culinary one. So we will be right back.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I think my battery's dead.
With free battery testing and charging, we can help you get back on the road.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
So what if I need a new one?
We have the right Duralast battery for you, only at AutoZone.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
And what about my old battery?
We can recycle it right here at America's number one battery destination.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
So, Catherine, are you familiar with monkfish in cuisine?
Oh, in cuisine? Absolutely. Yes, it's a delicacy. People love it. Both the flesh and then monkfish liver is also something that some people really try and get their hands on.
That's interesting. Have you ever had it?
No. Have I? I don't think that I have. I tend not to, you know, try to do any stunt eating, which in the context of Los Angeles is what it would be. So no, I've just had like monkfish, the flesh.
What does just the ordinary flesh of the monkfish taste like in your opinion?
It's a really good whitefish. Mm-hmm. Whitefish is mild, so it's probably whatever seasonings and butter.
absorbs the lime or whatever you put on it.
Yeah.
I've heard it's like got almost like a lobstery texture. Is that true, or is that just restaurants trying to talk it up a little bit?
Yeah, maybe. That is not my recollection of it at all.
Yeah, because lobster to me has a very specific, not fishy texture. It's kind of...
You would think you wouldn't want a lobster texture in a fish because wouldn't that mean the fish was very rubbery? This is not resonating with me, but who knows?
So this is... I think this is just trying... Maybe it's marketing for the monkfish to make it seem fancy.
Yeah, I mean... And they do that, and I feel like it's different enough from sea bass that they can't call it sea bass, even though they call just about every other fish in the ocean sea bass when it's on a restaurant menu, but not monkfish. It's too different.
Yeah. And I've seen, I also like in researching this, like I've seen certain publications claiming, oh, this is sustainable, and then other publications saying, no, it's definitely not sustainable. I think it's so hard when you're researching, because I eat fish, but I like to eat fish that, if I can, eating fish that is more sustainable and also not full of mercury is a plus.
That's such a winning combination, yeah.
And it's really hard to do research on it because I don't think, you know, it's always easy to get the correct information on this. Like, I've seen sources saying, like, well, their populations are stable enough such that it's sustainable. Or sources saying, like, well, but a lot of them are caught via trawling, which is definitely not sustainable because that's a method that kicks up a lot of the, like, coral and sand and stuff and destroys the seafloor. So I honestly have... I feel like the jury's out for me whether to eat this fish.
Yeah, and the seafood industry in particular is very secretive. They've got a lot of stuff going on that they don't want us to know about, and then that just raises more questions about, like, well, what is sustainable for you? I think two people both operating in good faith can come up with a different definition of sustainable, because some people are going to say, well, if the people catching this fish are literal slaves, that's probably not good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and I don't know if that's true for monkfish, but there's just, it's like some people truly believe that farmed fish is better than wild and vice versa. And it's just, to eat ethically, you have to put so much thought and effort into it. It's really hard.
Yeah. Even if you're vegetarian or vegan, I think it's still like knowing which kinds of crops are
Absolutely.
More sustainable and like what the working conditions for farmers are. It's
yep.
not that, and I don't think it's not worthwhile to try to research it. I just think it's something where it, like when we put it on the consumer to figure this stuff out, it is so, there's so many hurdles, and I feel like we need a better system of regulation so that it's not like a consumer at the grocery store going like, oh, monkfish, that's interesting. Well, I guess I'll do half an hour of research while standing next to the fish aisle to see if this is okay to eat. And then after 30 minutes, not knowing whether or not it's okay to eat.
I know. And see, I am that person who will stand there researching in the grocery store. But like, I don't have kids. Like, I have the time to do stuff like that. You're totally right. Putting on the consumer is way too much. And especially because...
Right.
You know, we don't have any consumer education in schools, so we don't even know what we're looking for.
Yeah. No, really. No, absolutely. I mean, knowing, and also just like things about like safety, like knowing which types of fish tend to have more mercury in them. Because it's like when you eat fish, you're like, well, this is healthy. This is a healthy meat. You know, it's like, and it, I mean, people aren't wrong because it's like, you know, fish has a lot of like omega, you know, 3 proteins in it. It's a protein that is not typically as, you know, full of like, say, cholesterol as say like red meat. It's got a lot of good stuff in it. But then if you're getting a huge dose of mercury, it's like,
yeah, it kind of wipes everything else out.
Right. But then there are certain types of fish that have less mercury and some that have more. And then it's just like you have to do this cost benefit of like, well, if I eat this fish for my health, how much mercury am I getting? If it's a low enough dose, it actually is worth it to eat that fish to be healthy. And so it's just, I think it's, and I mean, I'm with you. Like, I feel like I do like an extensive amount of research on food and both in terms of health and like the ethics. And often I'm just become more confused after I do it.
right.
But yeah, so it's, I guess it's a little bit of a tangent, but it's just like, it's so hard to know. So I've never personally eaten monkfish, but it seems interesting because it's definitely not the typical white fish that I see around.
Yeah, no, it's its own thing. It is good. Man, I just keep staring at this picture, and unlike the snake picture, I was like, I'm just not going to look at this monkfish. I'm like, you're really something.
Yeah.
Look at this guy.
So now we're no pun intended, but now we're going to get into the meat of this issue, which is that the monkfish is an absolutely bananas monster from the deep that I think isn't, it's like we talk a lot about sharks, we talk a lot about deep sea anglers and stuff, and we have these ideas of like these monstrous fish. This one I feel like doesn't get as much attention for how monstrous it is, but it is just as disturbing as the deep sea angler without as much PR. So these are also known as frogfish and sea devils. Unsurprising if you're looking at them.
Yeah.
They are actually in the same order as deep sea anglerfish, and they have a lot of similar qualities, but they are much flatter, wider. They tend not to live as deep when compared to certain species of deep sea anglerfish, but they still live on the seafloor. And they are absolute monsters. They have these huge, wide monster mouths. In fact, like most of their body is like their mouth and their head and their jaws. Like that's like 90%, 80% of their body is like jaws and face, essentially.
Yeah. This, you know, I scrolled down and I saw the picture below of the head on one that you have taken from above.
Yeah,
that is nightmarish. Well, I don't know why the above from above angle looks so much scarier.
I think it's because you can see the proportion that it is basically like mostly a mouth and then a small body attached to it.
Yeah, it's like the Joker of fish or something. That's
it is kind of like the Joker. They also have this weird beard of this like fringe like beard of barbells growing on their chins. It's to help with camouflage. Oh, I forgot to put a photo of that in there. You deserve to see that. Because it's actually a little funny. I'm seeing recipes. That's not what I want. There we go. And I'll include this in the show notes too. I just added a picture of a living monkfish with its funny little beard.
Oh, that is a funny little beard. I don't think I've ever seen the beard before. Does it disintegrate or when it dies? Like, why have?
I mean, this
it kind of makes it endearing looking.
Some
grandpa
species
monkfish
don't have as prominent. Like, this is a species that might not be fished as much. It's
okay.
This one has a more prominent one. The other species, it's also the beard is like generally the same color as the rest of the skin. So, like, once it's out of the water, it's probably just kind of flattened against its jaw, so you can't really see it.
Okay.
I think all the species do have those little protrusions, just like some species are more prominent. This one definitely is giving me sort of like a Quaker Oats man beard, you know, like
absolutely
like a chin strap neck beard.
Yes. Yeah. No, neck beard, which could go either way.
So they live on the seafloor at depths ranging from about 2,000 to over 3,000 feet. So that's around 600 to 1,000 meters in both Atlantic and Mediterranean waters. There's a few different species. Certain species, such as the Lophius americanus, also known as the all-mouth American anglerfish, which I love that name, can grow up to around 50 pounds or nearly 23 kilograms and live up to around 30 years old. So they can be chunky and hunky.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's impressive.
They can also use their pectoral fins to walk along the sea floor. And depending on their, and you're making a face. You don't like that.
Don't tell me about fish walking. No, thank you. It's so weird, like fears about animals and stuff can be so nonsensical. It's totally meaningless to my life that monkfish can walk across the ocean floor, but for some reason it's really freaking me out.
There is this dog related to like the sight hounds, like the Afghan hounds. I forgot what it's called, but it's borzoi. That's it. And normally very cute. I have seen pictures of borzoi on their hind legs, and it freaks me out. I don't know
really?
Why. I love dogs. I love all dogs, borzoi included. They're silly little noodle doggies with long noodle faces. But this dog, which is already quite long and tall, and it looks a little bit like an Afghan hound, but it has this really long snout. And then when it walks on its hind legs, I'm afraid of just being killed. I don't know why. It's
no. Yes, absolutely. I'm looking. I googled borzoi on hind legs and it looks like a cryptid.
Yes,
absolutely.
It looks like some kind of weird human has dressed themselves as a dog and with only the worst intentions.
That is what it looks like.
So I get it when, like, animals are normally not scary, but in certain contexts they are, for sure. So, yes, unfortunately, monkfish do walk on their fins on the ocean floor. They will hide themselves among the sand, rocks, or seaweed, depending on their environment. And they're basically, at this point, living mounds that will hide and wait for something to come close. And what they actually have, like their anglerfish relatives, is a lure. And so it's a filament on top of their head. It's actually a modified fin that has a bulb on the end of it. So it's basically this long, skinny thing with a bulb on the end that they can move around and kind of wiggle. And they move it around. And as soon as a fish comes up and gives it a little nibble, that activates the mouth. And they use their wide, expandable jaws to grab the fish and suck it inwards. And a charming little detail is that with the mini pointy needle-like teeth, they're all facing inwards, like towards its belly. And they can actually sort of be flat, like flattened a little bit. And so that means that they can suck the fish in. But then if the fish tries to get out and go the other direction, it gets caught on the teeth. So it's like a one-way, it's, you know, like when you're driving on those, yes, like spikes, like out of like a parking lot or something. So you can drive one way, but not the other way.
It's, yeah.
That's how these fish mouths work.
Is that where we got the idea?
Someone like pulled up one of these fish and was like, I've got a great idea for parking lot.
Exactly.
Maybe. You know, animals can be the mother of invention.
They can be. So what animals eat monkfish?
Humans.
Right.
And probably larger fish. I think humans are their main predators, though. We're so strange.
Yeah, we are. I guess I just keep wanting to know, making sure that these animals get got, too.
They do. They do, for sure.
Okay.
They are able, though, to swallow prey as large as their whole bodies, because apparently even though their abdomen is relatively small compared to their heads, it's kind of like elastic and expandable like a snake. So they can just kind of like eat a whole fish that's pretty much as big as they are. No problem.
No problem. Yeah. I mean, what about, I know that they are deep in the ocean, but has a human ever gotten hurt by a monkfish?
I mean, they're not going to kill a human. They can't, like, eat a whole human. That's not going to happen. A person may have gotten bitten by one, and I'm sure that hurts.
Yeah, I would imagine.
But,
yeah,
no, these things aren't trying to eat people. That's not happening.
Okay. Okay.
So, that nightmare you can, you know.
Yeah, I've never. Monkfish don't scare me. Yeah. No, I think we're good. We're past the snakes. I'm all good now.
The thing is, like, once you've eaten an animal, can it really scare you again? Because it's like, you know, I'm actually the apex predator. I ate you.
Interesting. I guess we have to eat everything and find out.
That was Darwin's idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, though, I think I'm 99% sure I have eaten snake before when I was in middle school.
Hmm.
And they still scare me.
You know what? I have a similar story. Someone served what they claimed was snake during some kind of school project about snakes. I think it was chicken. I don't think it was snake.
Really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they lied. I'm calling you out. Calling you out, Julie.
It was a fellow student doing a presentation.
Yeah, I just can't imagine where they would have sourced the snake meat. So I'm pretty sure it was chicken. I tried it. It was good, but it seemed like it was definitely chicken.
Yeah. I mean, if her parents had bought her real snake to cook and serve to people, that would have been like one of the more expensive school projects that's ever been completed.
It's true. I for a long time, I claimed, though, that I ate snake. And I, upon reflection, I'm like, I think that might have actually been chicken. But I would try snake. I just don't. I love snakes, so I don't really want to have one killed for me.
Very reasonable.
And I don't really want to eat roadkill either. I'm not that level of like scavenger quite yet.
No, I think I'd rather be a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't feel the need for meat in my diet, which is not to say I'm a vegetarian, but I would say like, yeah, I'm a carb person. Please give me all the carbs.
I'm a breaditarian as well.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we're going to talk about one of the world's least picky animals, whose appetite is just completely buck wild, and you may be surprised, or maybe not surprised, what animal this is. So we will return shortly.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got
to
change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
Get in the zone.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
Get in the zone.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
So, Catherine, do you like a heron?
Yeah, I do like them. I like birds. Mm-hmm. I think they can be pretty. I think they're cool. Looking at these pictures, though, it looks like there's many different kinds of herons. I'm
there
certainly
are
not
indeed
familiar with all of them.
There are indeed. I mean, it's interesting because herons are a family of many, many different species of aquatic birds. So there's over 70 species of birds in the heron family, which includes birds from herons to egrets to bitterns. These are all birds that are considered to be in the heron family. And it also includes kind of some of the classic birds, like gray herons, blue herons. These are the white herons. These are all in the same family of heron.
I see. Do you remember from when you lived in LA what the birds at the Silver Lake Reservoir were? Were those egrets?
There are both egrets and herons there. I think there are a species of white egret.
Okay. In the spring, when they have their babies and they're all sitting up in the trees just screaming their heads off, it is the craziest noise and I really enjoy it.
Okay, so great blue herons are found in Silver Lake. So those are the ones that are going to be the big guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think it's the great blue herons that make a ton of noise. I'm just looking at the Silver Lake Wildlife Instagram page.
I see, yes. So that would be it.
Yeah.
We're actually going to talk about the great blue heron because they are absolute monsters. I love them, though. So larger species of herons, such as gray herons and great blue herons and Goliath herons, will eat so many different things, from fish to other species. We'll talk about it. So the heron family ranges greatly. So the smallest member of the heron family is this bird called the least bittern. It is a cute little North American bird, just about a foot long and 3 ounces, little guy. Bitterns are really interesting because when you look at them, you're like, this is not a heron. Where's the neck? There's no neck. Because they actually typically tuck their neck in and they're like, hold it. Like, it's when you like try to turtle your head down, that's what they're doing. And so normally you look at them and like, they have zero neck. There's no neck there. But they can stretch out their heads when they're hunting or flying. And it's like they've got this expandable, it's not really expandable neck. It's just there. It's just kind of tucked in. But it's actually quite a long neck. It's like, have you ever had like those grabby things where it's like, it's this, not telescoping, but kind of like thing that folds in and then you kind of squeeze some clamps and then this grabby hand comes out. It's like that, yeah. But a bird.
Yeah.
So
they're hiding a lot of neck under there.
They are That's hiding crazy. A lot of neck under their feathers. So yeah. if you looked under the feathers, you'd see this neck kind of form a U-shaped loop. But yeah, they can stretch that neck out and grab fish. So yes, they are little guys, but no less a heron. The largest heron is the Goliath heron. It is found in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. The South Asian population is in decline, but they are found in lake regions. It's a very striking bird. It's tan and gray with black and white markings on its beak and neck. To me, it looks very dinosaur-like. I love this one.
Yeah.
Grows up to 5 feet tall, including its neck. So that's over 1.5 meters. And it can weigh around 11 pounds or 5 kilograms. So it's tall, but not a ton of meat.
No. What a skinny mini.
But look at that. Like, look at the beak and its head. It looks, you know, like a really long, noodly velociraptor.
It absolutely does, but like a distinguished one.
A distinguished one. I like this. This is a pretty bird. It's not like scary looking to me. It's like a swankier dinosaur.
Yes, exactly. You know, I obviously have no reason to be afraid of snakes, but I also don't understand it when people are afraid of birds.
I know some people who are afraid of birds.
It's a thing.
I think that part of it might be birds can be intimidating when they come in big flocks. So if there's like a big flock of birds, that can be kind of scary. Or if you live in a city with a lot of pigeons and they kind of fly towards your face, that can be startling. And I think that people have this concept about pigeons and birds as being maybe kind of dirty. They get intimidated, especially if there's a city-dwelling bird that, like, flies near them, and then they get scared. So I can understand it on a certain level, but I do not have that fear. I absolutely love birds.
I forgot about pigeons, and there was a story in my family for 2 generations that pigeons killed my great-grandpa with their disease.
What?
Yeah. So it was like I was raised to fear and hate pigeons. I can't believe I forgot all about this. It's just that when I was in my mid-20s or so, I realized that story made absolutely no sense. Yeah, I think because like what he died of wasn't completely clear, or at least it wasn't to my mom, but she was a kid when he died. But yeah, the story was just like a pigeon pooped on him, or pigeons flew in his face and the feathers touched his face and it killed him, or something like that.
Huh. It's interesting you bring that up. We may talk about that a little bit later. Okay. So herons, hold that thought about pigeons.
Okay.
And then we're going to talk about how you should be more afraid of herons than pigeons. Actually, you shouldn't be afraid of either of them unless you are small enough to fit in a pigeon or fit in a heron mouth. So herons can either directly catch prey in their beak or spear it. So typically it's fish on the menu, but they are opportunistic. If they make the calculation that it can be eaten and swallowed whole, they will certainly try, especially species like the great blue heron that you find in Silver Lake and the gray heron. So the gray heron is found throughout Europe, Asia, and Africa in wetlands. It's about a meter tall or a little over 3 feet, and it weighs around 2 kilograms, around 4 pounds. So, you know, they're not huge, but for a bird, they're pretty big. They will eat fish, amphibians, crustaceans, small birds, ducklings, ducks, small mammals, rabbits, and more. They smash their prey against rocks, snap their necks, or drown them before swallowing them whole. And they are considered an apex predator in their environments.
So which is worse, smashing something against a rock until its neck breaks or eating it while it's still alive?
I mean, eating it while it's still alive. Like, if you get your neck snapped, I feel like that's a much easier way to go than, you know.
Yeah,
being
I agree.
In a
it's just
maw.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true. It's the smashing it against the rocks imagery that, like, threw me for a loop.
It's
but you're
pretty,
right, I guess.
Yeah, it's shockingly violent.
They must have gotten house pets at some point. This has to have happened at some
point. Yeah, probably. You know, it's I don't think I've seen anything documented. Most likely because I simply don't want to Google, has a heron eaten a kitten? I'm not Googling that ever.
Fair. So, I don't think I will either.
No. So another heron, one that's actually found in North and Central America, is the great blue heron. That's your local heron, Catherine. It's about 4.5 feet high, which is over a meter, and weighs around 5 pounds. So that's a little over 2 kilograms. They are sort of a grayish blue. They will eat fish, crustaceans, frogs, toads, snakes, lizards, shrews, rats, moles, voles, ground squirrels, regular squirrels, muskrats, weasels, rabbits, smaller aquatic birds, including ducks, chicks of various species, pied-billed grebes, dippers, rails, terns, and young alligators.
What a diverse diet. This is so healthy.
Yes, this bird is the nutrition expert that we need. Just eat everything.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and it actually goes, it's really on point for where nutrition is right now, because that's so much protein, and none of us are getting enough
protein,
but this bird is.
The heron diet. Eat everything you can fit in your mouth.
Yes.
Including young alligators.
Do they ever eat vegetables?
Not that I am aware of. Unless you consider fish to be a vegetable, which they're not.
No. Do some people consider fish to be vegetables?
Maybe.
Probably.
So, yes, as pretty and elegant as these birds are, they're absolute monsters. If you shrunk one of us down to the size of, like, at least a rabbit, it would eat you. No problem.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's... Well, you know what? I'm okay with that. I'm not the size of the rabbit, so I guess I don't have to be afraid. And I really do. I mean, to your point about them being monsters, they do. They make the craziest noises. The babies are so weird looking. I love them. I love. It's just like just a lot of weirdness in one animal.
All right, we have to play a heron call then. Heron. Now that sounds like some screaming.
Yeah.
I can imagine that being annoying if there's like 5 of them all together doing this.
Yeah. But as long as you're just walking by, I find it delightful.
Well, speaking of animal sounds, would you like to play a little game with me?
Yes.
This is the Mystery Animal Sound Game. Guess who's squawking? Every week, I pick a mystery animal sound, and you, the listener, and you, the guest, try to guess who is making that sound. So last week's Mystery Animal Sound hint was this. This is a very common bird, but you might not recognize the sound unless you're close friends with one. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Have any guesses?
I know we were just talking about pigeons, but I feel like it's some sort of small bird, like a pigeon or a dove, which I don't know if those are the exact same animals with different coloring or something.
That like is a chesty correct. Bird. We've it been is? Primed for pigeons. We did it. So this is indeed a pigeon. This is a pet pigeon happily cooing as it's being pet. So domesticated pigeons are actually relatively common pets. And the pigeons you see in the city are typically feral pigeons that we domesticated from rock doves. So rock doves look fairly similar. But yeah, a lot of these city pigeons are actually a feral population that over many generations have been around because we actually domesticated pigeons both as pets, as messengers, and as food. So yeah, most of the pigeons that you interact with today are probably feral domesticated pigeons. And by feral, that doesn't mean they're vicious or anything. It just means that they are a population that was domesticated and now they're out and about. It's hard to call them exactly wild because they're living in the city, but they have no masters. We were talking about this idea that pigeons are actually disease-ridden or dirty. And they're actually not nearly as dirty or disease-ridden as they are often feared to be. It is true that there are a few diseases you can get from pigeons, but usually you would only get them if you're cleaning a large amount of dried droppings. So not from the pigeon itself, not even if you're pooped on necessarily, but if you're like cleaning a large quantity of dried pigeon poop in like a poorly ventilated area. And even if you do get ill, it's usually only going to pose a threat to you if you are immunocompromised. According to the New York City Health Department, like cleaning small amounts of pigeon droppings is probably not going to hurt you, especially if it's in a well-ventilated area. But if you're cleaning like a lot of them, like maybe from a vent or something, if you use water to clean it, like wet cloth, a hose, that really helps because it doesn't kick up as much dust as if you're just sort of using dry implements to clean it. You can also wear gloves and a face mask and keep the area well ventilated. And that is going to really help in terms of preventing you from catching anything from it. But just kind of being around pigeons in the city and having one fly near you or even poop on you, you're probably not going to catch anything. Like, I wouldn't kiss a feral pigeon on the face or like try to subject myself to their poop because that's gross. But they really aren't, you know, if you have a pigeon like fly by you or bonk into you, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, I got to figure that people maybe call them dirty because they're so associated with high density urban areas,
yes,
which a lot of people are afraid of anyway.
Also, yeah, when they are in sort of like urban areas and there's a lot of problems with their feet often. So like they will get a lot of it is because like if it gets too cold, like they'll get frostbite and on their toes and then they might lose some toes or get like sort of gnarled sort of warty growths on their feet, which kind of make them look gnarly, or like they get like threads or hairs or something like tied around their feet. It can cause them problems and stuff. And so they might kind of look scruffy or dirty, but it's just because they're like picking up dirt from the streets that we've generated. So it's like,
right,
you know,
right,
not really their fault. But they are actually still kept as pets today. And like dogs or cats, they're actually bred for like different colors, for different feather patterns. In fact, you may have seen pigeons in your city that like are interesting sort of splotchy colors or brown or like different color patterns. That's all from human selective breeding. And then those pigeons, when they become feral or escape or breed with the local population of other feral pigeons, those genes get woven into the mix. And then you have these birds for generations that will have these interesting color patterns. But yeah, there's definitely like if you like the idea of having a pigeon as a pet, but you like have this negative association with like street pigeons, a lot of the pet pigeons don't look very similar to street pigeons because they're like different color patterns. And of course, also because they're pets, they're kept very clean. So they do not look dirty at all because, you know, they get to live in luxury and not have to walk over the well-trod streets of the city.
How do you feel about keeping birds as pets?
I feel like it's something that should be undertaken with an understanding of what you're getting into. So I think pigeons are actually much better pets than a lot of birds because they are very affectionate. I think it's better to get more than one pigeon, but they can bond with humans really well. They're much less expensive and easier to maintain than, say, a parrot. And while they do have a lot of social needs, like they are not, it's not nearly to the extent of, say, a parrot. I think a parrot, certain species of parrots and macaws, they can have like cognition that's like similar to like a toddler. And it is a huge responsibility to take care of a parrot. They live really long time. They have so many social needs. And sometimes they get psychological problems from being isolated from other parrots. So I would say, you know, when you're looking at pet birds, like pigeons are actually a really good type of pet bird. I don't think it's cruel to keep a pigeon as a pet because they've been domesticated. I think it's similar to keeping like a dog or a cat as a pet. As long as you've done your research and you know what you're getting into, because pigeons can live to be anywhere from 15 to 20 years. So you are signing on to a long time with this pigeon. And
wow,
they are social.
I would not have guessed that.
So what you shouldn't do is get a pigeon, stick them in a cage and, you know, just feed them once in a while. That's obviously not good. But if you interact with them a lot, especially if you have like more than one pigeon, you can actually, I think, give a domesticated pigeon a nice life if you have enough space, if you have enough resources. It's, you know, it's like a dog. Like, you know, you can have a dog with a very happy life or not so happy life. Like, you wouldn't keep a dog just in a crate all the time. But if your dog is out and about and you're taking care of it and giving it a lot of socialization, they can be quite happy.
Well, if anyone wants to have their heart melt, there's a big feature in People magazine about a pigeon and a chihuahua puppy who live at a foundation for special needs animals and best friends. And the pigeon sits on the chihuahua because it thinks it's its mom. It's lots of pictures.
Yeah, I've actually read that pigeons get along with cats and dogs pretty well. Especially
amazing.
compared to other birds. And you can, you know, definitely train your cat and your dog. I would say if you have a pet which has a really high prey drive, I would not have that combination. But if you have a dog that does not have a high prey drive or it's small like a chihuahua, you know, like they can actually get along fairly well.
Cute.
Very cute. Definitely look up photos of pet pigeons. They're adorable. And I think it also will give you a new appreciation for just your city pigeons because they are the same species. It's just like maybe they're a little cleaner looking. They're a little tidier, little different colors. It's like looking at sort of a street dog versus like a Pomeranian. But it's, you know, they are at their core the same animal. It's interesting because here I live in northern Italy and we have a lot of pigeons here and we have all sorts of like different interesting color morphs of these pigeons. Like there's white ones, there's brown ones, there's like all kinds of speckled patterns. But because we have we don't have so much car traffic and we have a ton of like sort of open public spaces where there's not like there's a lot of like grass and trees and just these birds aren't really harried so much. You'll just see all these pigeons just kind of like sitting around. I've never seen such calm, chilled out pigeons as I have in the city. And I mean, I think they're really cute. Like when the quality of life goes up for the pigeon, I think like their cuteness level also goes up because they're, you know, they look healthy. They look content. And you'll just look over and there's like a little pigeon sitting on the ground and it's like it's not scared of you, it's just looking at you like, hey, what's up.
Oh, cute.
Very cute. Yes. So, you know, if you're if you love the idea of having a bird and you don't mind cleaning up bird poop and you have the space, but you don't really want to commit to like getting a parrot, a pigeon is actually, I think, a pretty good alternative. It's as long as you know what you're getting into, because it's not like no pet is like easy. Every pet has its challenges. But, you know, mm-hmm. I don't think pet ownership is inherently wrong when we've domesticated animals that like depend on us and that we can make happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
And it's certainly with the pigeons, I think when you compare like pigeons to like escape outdoors versus cats that escape outdoors, usually will have a less bad impact on the environment. So there are definitely benefits to pigeons.
Yeah.
All right. So on to this week's mystery animal sound. The hint is this. This raptor is all about No Shave November. Did you hear that? Kind of sounds like a squeaky toy that's lost a bit of its squeak. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Got any guesses?
I don't know this kind of bird at all. I think it's a bird.
I mean, that narrows it down, to be honest. It's like, yeah, with this game, it can be any animal in the world. So narrowing it down to bird is a pretty big step.
Okay. Yeah, that's all I got. Yeah, it's some sort of raptor bird.
Some sort of raptor bird. Well, we will find out on the next episode of Creature Feature. If you think you know, you can write to me at creaturefeaturepod@gmail.com. Or if you have questions, or if you have a pet pigeon and you want to tell me how cute they are, or any pet, write to me. Love the pet pictures. Catherine, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can people find you?
Oh, let's see. So my podcast is called Smart Mouth, and there's a accompanying Substack, smartmouth.substack.com. That's for food history of the world. And if there's any Angelenos listening, which I'm sure there are, I also just started howtoeatla.com, which is local restaurant reviews.
That sounds great. L.A., like, I've lived a few places over the years, and L.A. is the best place I've ever lived in terms of food. It is, like, just no competition. I have not lived in New York. I have visited New York, so it's hard. It's not maybe a fair comparison, but in terms of the places that I have lived, L.A., it is the most diverse, most high-quality food scene I have ever experienced.
That is objectively correct.
Well, I might check that out for next time I visit LA.
Excellent.
But yes, definitely check that out if you are a gourmand or just interested in the topic of food, because I think it's fascinating. And thank you guys so much for listening. If you're enjoying the show and you leave a rating or review, I greatly appreciate it. I read every review. And of course, every rating really helps out the show. Thank you to the Space Cossacks for their super awesome song, Exolumina. Creature Feature is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts like the one you just heard, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or hey, guess what? Wherever you listen to your favorite shows. I'm not your mother, and I don't judge you. See you next Wednesday!
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Welcome to AutoZone. What are you working on today?
I got to change the oil in my car.
Right now, get 5 quarts of Pennzoil Platinum Full Synthetic with an STP Extended Life Oil Filter for only $36.99.
Get in zone.
What do I do with my old oil?
We can recycle your used oil for free.
Get in zone.
And do you have oil for my old work truck?
You can find the right high mileage oil to help it go farther right here at AutoZone.
Get in zone, AutoZone.
Restrictions apply.